Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
It's spelling bee time. Your word is tough.
Can you use it in a sentence?
He's running on a tough gnarl in his head.
Tough. T-U-F-F. Tough. All right. Rockin' the Suburbs. We are here in the basement.
We are in the basement. We're down in the record place.
The record warehouse.
Yes.
That you have here in your house, right. Patrick, right?
Yep.
You know, recently we had a guest on, I guess it was last week, my friend Bill Horn.
I like Bill a lot.
And he came down here and he would just, you know, just like jaw just dropped as he was looking around this place, right? These records.
There's a lot of vinyl down here, man.
There's a lot. And this is only like a small portion of what you have owned in your lifetime,
right? Yeah,
this
is probably about half of what I've owned. At one point, my collection was twice the size.
Right.
Yeah.
You've told the story before about the buckling floor, right?
That's right. There's a lot of records to deal with. So you had to make some lifestyle changes. But I tried to winnow down to the good stuff.
Now, how long have you lived in this house?
Oh, boy. What year is it now? Almost 20 years now.
Okay. Yeah. So these records have not had to have been moved.
Not these, no. They've kind of settled down.
They have a
here
home
in the basement.
Here. Yeah,
they've been here a long time. They're going to be sad if they ever have to leave.
Because that was always the big thing about having all this physical media is you just never want to move it.
Man. Yeah. But I did move 3 times when I had the collection at its peak, and it was never easy. I had to pay friends and cases of beer to help me carry them. Because I wouldn't trust any moving company to touch my records. So we had to do it on our own, and it was always like a kamikaze bad thing. Yeah.
They're so heavy.
They really are.
All right. So speaking of records, here on Rockin' the Suburbs, I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
We're going to talk about one here that's in your collection.
Yeah.
An original pressing. It's quite impressive. And it was released 30... I'm always bad with this math. 30 years ago, right? 30 years ago this month.
30-some years ago. I think this record came out in 1987, which is 30 years ago.
30 years ago, June of 1987.
Yep. Sometime in June of 1987.
Yes. Yep. We don't have an exact date. Apparently be pinpointed, but it is June 87. It is Sonic Youth's sister.
One of my probably very favorite Sonic Youth albums, Jim. I'd put this right up there with either number one or number two, and probably in a pinch, I'd probably say this is my favorite Sonic Youth album.
Yeah, I think it's mine too.
Yeah.
I was actually, you know, in preparing for this episode, we were going to talk about this record. I was curious to see if this always sort of rated number one in terms of like critics' rankings of the album. And I was surprised to find there was at least one list where it came up number one, but most of them had it like number two to Daydream Nation.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yes.
It's immediate follow-up.
Yes, that's right. Which is a great record, too.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm not really going to argue with that.
No.
But I think I like this one the best as well. And, you know, you mentioned the album before, or you started to, I think, Evolve.
Yeah, Evolve.
Right? Which... this one, I think, takes more of a step toward them actually writing traditional song structures, right? It's not. It still has a lot of the experimentalness that is Sonic Youth, but it tries to form it into, you know, what people think of maybe a little bit more as like recognizable songs,
I think you said it right, Jim.
I don't mean it like that, but you know what I'm saying. Yes.
No, I actually think you did say it right. I mean, this is the crucial period of the band, and this record really crystallizes what was great about them, because it takes the early sort of nasty scrape of, say, Bad Moon Rising and the first couple, when they were just kind of find their sound, the first couple EPs that had some different drummers, and then they had this guy Bob Burt, who was in Pussy Galore for a while, and they got that together. And then at Evol and especially on Sister, where I really think it came together the best, they took, number one, a new drummer. Steve Shelley was in the band at that point. Number two, they took the melodic influences that they had, the sort of spirit of fun that didn't really come across in the early stuff, and they wrote songs. They actually, for the first time, sat down and just didn't do like noisescapes, right? They actually wrote songs. And one of the things I always love about this record was both my two older daughters really got into it when they were in high school.
How nice.
Yeah, and I think it was for one main reason that they got into it, and then I'm glad they stayed for the rest of the beauty and the power and the evocative moods that this album creates. But they both went to Catholic school. All three of our daughters did. And there's the second song on the record is a song called Catholic Block. And they both really got into it in a rebellious sort of way. And that's always bonded me to this album.
Was actually the song I was going to pick
you
to play. We didn't plan this out ahead of time. That's my favorite song on the record.
Oh, it's an incredible song.
And lyrically, I don't know. I can see how other people might connect to it better than me, but I just think just from a, musical standpoint, it's just great. I love the guitar riff, and then just even when Thurston's voice comes in, it's just a little bit off. And then, as we just heard, it kind of builds into some of the noise stuff, but still doesn't go too far off. I think part of the reason why I just love this album so much is because it does such a great job of giving you sort of something to, latch onto, but yet you never quite feel totally comfortable with it. And to me, that's just brilliance,
On the way the drums come in on that song, with that little hi-hat and that sort of beat, man, it's so fantastic. And you really realize this is a band that's really rocking this out.
Yeah.
They recorded this record, Jim, on purpose in Manhattan at a studio with a lot of old analog equipment because they wanted that warm sound. And, I just love the way everything comes together. And it's pretty immediately clear from listening to Catholic Block that this is a great, inventive American guitar band in the tradition of the Velvet Underground and the Stooges and the Ramones and all these bands that came before in television, right? Like all these New York City bands. This is a really inventive American guitar band who tuned their guitars to different settings and explored what those sounded like. And, often it didn't sound like the strings were even really on the guitar. They were so loose and they were just vibrating around. And when you saw the band live at this time, and I was lucky enough to see them a bunch of times, there would just be guitars loaded on stage with drumsticks stuck in the frets and all kinds of different tunings. And they would spend 5 minutes between songs getting the tunings right. But Lee Ronaldo and Thurston Moore, without a doubt, this is a great American guitar band. And this is the record that proves it, I think.
They were always just, trying to capture that thing, that sort of elusive thing. Like, what is that moment, that sonic moment we can get, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, they're brilliant. They are absolutely brilliant band. You mentioned a lot of the influences that you can hear in that. I think, I immediately think to Velvet Underground.
Yeah.
But so a lot of that punk stuff too. Then sort of moving forward, all the bands that they influenced, right? I mean,
exactly.
I just don't think, this was 87 and this was their fourth album, I want to say.
Kind of their fourth formal album.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you count the first one as an album.
Yeah. So they had a long career beyond this, but they had already had a few records under their belt. Mm-hmm. And from this sort of moving forward from here, I mean, there's so many bands, the whole indie rock thing as we think of, right? I think, owes a lot to Sonic Youth.
Oh, without a doubt. I don't think hardly any of it would exist the way it does, right? I mean, they were right there with Black Flag and the Swans and some of those early bands that, were able to tour and set the pace for other people. And, they plowed as many rows that many people followed as any band. I mean, if you believe legend, they were the ones that got Nirvana signed to Geffen.
Well, yeah.
You know, like, so they had that kind of influence.
I think that's true. I think a lot of bands just revered them, you know?
Yeah, without a doubt.
You know, they were sort of, they became these sort of godfathers of indie rock, yeah. Right? You know?
Right, and Kim and Thurston were kind of the first couple of indie rock, too.
That's right.
You know, it was pretty amazing.
Well, since you took that song.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. So as we play into our little break here, let's go with another just rocker. And I just.
Okay.
I love this song. If for no other reason than it's just, you know, it's got this awesome title and you just, it puts this image in your head, right?
Okay.
Tough Gnarl. Like a tough gnarl, yeah. Right? Like who writes like that? Exactly. That's amazing. So let's hear that and we'll do our little break and we'll come back.
He's running on a tough gnarl in his head. He's got a fatal erection. Home in bed. He's really smart and he's really fast. He's got a heart to kill a f*** in his past. Saints preserve us. I got stuff. Saving grace is a sonic pickup.
Patrick, let me tell you a little story.
Okay.
Back in, let's say, late 70s or so.
Yeah.
When I was a, you know, pretty young kid, I would get the Sunday paper and read the comics, right? That was a big thing, right? And in the comics, they would usually have this ad for this thing where you could get, like, all these records for, like, a penny.
Yeah.
You get, like, a dozen records for, like, a penny, right?
You could literally tape a penny to the thing and send it back.
Right. And so I would want to do that because it was very exciting to me.
Yeah.
You know, mom, dad, it's a penny. It's like I got one laying around,
penny,
right? But what they told me was that's a subscription, right? And it's going to cost you a lot more money down the road.
Right.
And, you know, maybe you don't want to do that, right?
Right.
You're going to get stuck in something that you can't get out of, right? But what I learned then was, you know, subscriptions are something you might need to be wary about, right?
Right.
But what I'm here to tell you is, Rock in the Suburbs has a very special deal. It's not even a penny.
No, it's not a penny. It's free,
it's
man.
It's free, and it'll free. Always stay free, and it'll never change.
Yep.
You can subscribe to Rock in the Suburbs on Apple Podcasts /iTunes. You do that by going to your desktop, your mobile device, just hitting a little button that says subscribe. The show will come to you every day.
That's right. You get 1,000 free episodes.
That's right. Well, not yet, but eventually, you will. Yes.
Yeah.
And you can keep your penny. All right, so, Sister,
yeah.
Talk for a second here about the album cover. You have this original pressing, right?
Yeah,
and it's
a
little bit different than what you would find today.
That's right.
Even on Spotify, as I look at the album cover on Spotify, there's like this black square in the one corner.
Yeah, I remember the day I bought this record, Jim. I walked into Plan 9 Records in Charlottesville, Virginia with my friend Steve Healy, and we both picked up a copy of this album because it was on SST Records, and we love Sonic Youth. And the thing about the cover is they use some images that they probably should not have used, right? Right there, you can see some of the famous Mickey Mouse characters there in like Disney World or something, right? Mickey, Minnie, Goofy, Pluto. Disney didn't like that too much. They sent a cease and desist. There's a Richard Avedon photograph here that's a pretty famous photograph that was later blacked out on the record. I believe that's actually Lee Rinaldo's son right there, naked,
okay.
which is fine with everybody else.
That apparently
else.
Remains.
Yeah, that's apparently fine. But yeah, there was some stuff that had to be restricted and taken off this record. So it's kind of cool to have the original concept that they put out.
And, you know, one thing you have talked about in the past, too, is how an album cover sort of gives you a sense of what the record's like.
Yeah.
I think this does that.
Without
a
doubt.
This weird sort of collage of just seemingly sort of random images, kind of this odd sort of brown color that surrounds all
Isn't
of that stuff, right?
Yeah.
It gives you a real sense that it feels very indie, right? You know,
I
like
somebody
totally just put it together.
That. Yeah.
You mentioned this one on SST. They did two albums on SST.
Yeah. They were on Homestead, then SST, and then, you know, Daydream Nation came out. And then the next thing you knew, they were on Geffen Records and, you know, they were making a whole career of it.
Okay. Now, here's the next question I have for you.
Yeah.
This is Sonic Youth Chat with Patrick Foster, right?
Fire away.
Okay. At the time you got this, how did you listen to it? Like, sort of in what setting? What would prompt you to put this record on? And then second of all,
yeah,
like, might that be different today? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. I mean, this was very much for me and my friends that hung out together. One of those things you went and bought and you took it home and you all kind of sat around the turntable, right? And maybe you might have a case of Budweiser and maybe a few other things to relax you, and you would listen to the record and study it and pass the cover around and the lyric sheet, right? You'd all sit around and enthuse about the band.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
It's a record that has to be listened to, not just heard.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I was, you know, over the last couple of days, I'm trying to listen to it again.
Yep.
Sort of like, oh, let's review this. Maybe been... probably only about a few months at listens before, but yeah, it's been a little bit of time. I should listen to it again. And I tried listening to it at work. You can't do it.
No, you
it's
can't
not that
do
kind
it.
Of
no,
record.
It's an immersive experience. Yeah,
yeah. You have to sit down and listen to this record,
especially if you're like driving in the car or you're sitting around actually actively listening to the record.
And I'm not sure how many people do that anymore,
no,
which is a sad thing.
I don't think people do, you know?
Yeah. And then it's also not the kind of record you would put on a party.
No. It's definitely not.
Maybe a certain kind of party, but not the kind that most people think of as a party, right? So, all right, so we're going to play another song from Sister?
Yeah, I'm going to play something that I think sort of encapsulates some of the spirit of this record and the importance of this record. As we were talking about, yes, Sonic Youth coalesced all these different kinds of influences. You know, they had Television, Ramones, all the way back to Velvet Underground, right? But they also acknowledge that on this record with a song that I think is really important for the sense of sort of history it provides, for the sense of fun that it provides, and the sense of like straight up rock and roll that it provides. Because I think the early Sonic Youth was very much perceived as like a downtown New York art band,
right?
You know, that was out of tune and just, you know, had Bad Moon Rising with a lot of out of tune guitars and very discordant, you know, structures. They worked with Lydia Lunch. They had a song. But this record showed, I think, finally that they understood history and the whole thing had a sense of fun and a sense of power and a sense of, at the end of the night, it was really just about rock and roll. And so what they did was they put a cover song in this record.
All right. After all that buildup, hang on. We're going to play it in just a second here. Let's just do our little close here. Listen to Rock in the Suburbs once in a while.
Every day.
Or every day. Mm-hmm. You should probably also listen to Sonic Youth Sister just about every day.
Every day.
And you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, Stitcher, or TuneIn. Mm-hmm. You can email the show rock@suburbspod.com, which, by the way, you can also visit our website, which is suburbspod.com.
You should call us.
If you're glad or sad or high, call the Suburban Party Line.
It's 1-2-4-4-0-1984. There you go. And also find us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, @SuburbsPod. This is Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And after you hear, what is the song?
This is Hot Wire in My Heart, a cover by a San Francisco punk band called Crime from 1976.
That's awesome. And then we'll talk to you later.
Your world is tough.